Nick Foles is back, how the Eagles scored that nostalgic win over the Rams on Sunday night, plus how the Steelers finally got the best of Tom Brady. Can the Ravens keep winning with Lamar Jackson? Eli Manning struggles, Vance Joseph's fourth down decision, some terrible trivia hosting. We've got all of it and so much more on the Week 15 edition of the MMQB Monday Morning NFL Podcast. Hello and welcome to the MMQB Monday Morning NFL Podcast. I am Gary Gramling. He is Andy Benoit. We are into the stretch run, Andy. We're in the thick of it. How's that for a dramatic setup for this week's show? This is a really good week.
It's a great time of year. They're all really good weeks from here. No strength of schedule stuff because we had some upsets again today. And I'm excited for these last 2 weeks, but I'm more excited to talk about what happened in Week 15.
Yeah, this was I'm officially proclaiming this a good football day on Sunday. We had some teams that were sort of on the brink, bounce back with big wins. We had some big upsets, and we had a bit of nostalgia, including the Sunday night game where Nick Foles recaptures his magic from last January. The Eagles go to L.A. and beat the Rams somewhat handily. You got hairy at the end, but this was a game.
I wouldn't say handily. Yeah, it got very hairy. That was very hairy.
But they all get hairy. It's the NFL. Everyone makes a comeback.
Yep.
That's how it goes.
You said nostalgic for Nick Foles. Chris Collinsworth sure seemed nostalgic, didn't he? It's almost like Collinsworth thinks that Foles is the better emotional choice for the team than Wentz.
I'll say this about Foles. It has a touch of Tebow mania.
Tebow mania was so far off the chart. I mean,
Because Tebow mania made no sense, and after a while, you just had to sort of just close your eyes and just let it take you where it was going to take you, which was to the divisional round of the playoffs.
But. You mean pray for Tebow mania?
No,
Foles is religious as well, so I'm sure a lot of Tebow fans are Foles fans. But here's where it's different. Tim Tebow couldn't play professional football. Nick Foles won a Super Bowl. And that's the fine line between that Tebow mania and whatever you're trying to compare to here.
I'm just saying it's one of those things that you can get excited about. It's a weird underdog story. And by the way, everyone, 98% of the NFL is devoutly Christian. So two guys. The rest of them are, I don't know.
Well, he wears the WWJD wristband on his throwing hand, I noticed, because I remember thinking during, and it's a red one, so I guess that's not a uniform violation. The league, I dare you to go after that, but they'd probably prefer a green one on his wrist. But I wondered if it ever impacts his throwing, like 0.1%. Like, I'm surprised it's not on his left hand, but maybe there's something there, I don't know. You know what I thought was really interesting, though, about this Foles emotional side discussion thing? Was the point that Collinsworth made about how Alshon Jeffrey was basically happier to have Foles in the lineup. I'll tell you what happens on these production. I got a chance to sit in on the Monday night production meetings years ago when I was in college. Mm-hmm. And I didn't sit in on the part where the announcers talked to the team. So it was just the announcers talking with the producers and amongst themselves. But the teams give these guys almost unfiltered information, the guys they trust anyway. So I'm sure Troy Aikman gets unfiltered information. Collinsworth, I'm sure, would. Romo does. These high-level color commentators, respected play-by-play men, and the teams trust, look, the NFL and the networks are in a partnership. We trust our partners aren't going to screw us and that the announcers aren't going to say something we don't want, but we're going to give them the full story and let them work with the information. So when an announcer like Collinsworth kind of beats around the bush and says, Foles is maybe a better fit for Jeffrey. Jeffrey wasn't always thrilled with all the balls going to Zach Ertz. Mm-hmm. That's not the – and I'm not saying he did. I don't know this, but based on my observations, that's not the kind of thing an announcer says unless he's been told something very specific about that.
Yeah. No, it could be right. And look, Alshon Jeffrey had 8 for 160 tonight, and Zach Ertz had 3 for 22. I'm sure neither of them would really mind one way or another if the team weren't sitting outside the playoff picture at the moment. But what do you think of Foles tonight? He was
tough.
Pretty good.
Yeah, I think that's what he was. I admire that some of the hits he took and the throws he was willing to make with the hits looming. We'll see how he does next week in that regard, because that's the kind of thing where it plants a seed in the back of a QB's mind. Like Goff, for example, maybe we'll flip over to this side of the ball in a second. Mm-hmm. I think he's playing a little bit rushed. He does not look like the same QB right now. His offensive line's gotten not dominated, but thoroughly outplayed each of the last 3 weeks, and it's starting to show up in Goff on his intermediate passing. Foles, it hasn't. It didn't in this game, within the game, so that was fine. The running game got going a little bit better tonight. And then Ertz and Jeffrey was the more productive guy. Ertz, they still moved around the formation. The Rams were matching to those two. That's who normally the Rams match corners on receivers, no matter where the receivers line up, and they put a safety on the tight end. Well, tonight they were putting corners on tight ends because it's Zach Ertz. It's sometimes Dallas Goedert, and that's the nature of the Eagles' offense. The Eagles looked well-schemed in that regard, moving their personnel around.
And Goff. Yeah, he was getting a little bit happy with the feet.
Yeah, he was. He's not trusting things right now. That whole offense is not operating rhythmically like it has. They came out running the ball. Todd Gurley featured. A lot of people think, oh, good, run the ball. That's all you need. Well, with the Rams, it's about what your passing game does off of the running game. And we still didn't see the rhythmic play action, not quick strike, but very timing-based passes that just go like clockwork with this team, where Goff on the outside zone hits that top of the drop, his back foot, and finds Robert Woods or Brandon Cooks on an 18-yard in-breaker. We didn't see very much of that in this game, and what we did see is the same thing we saw the last couple weeks with the Rams, which means the blueprint is out on them. That is a defense playing four deep coverage against them, cover four, yeah, keeping both safeties back. Corners match up on the outside, and that's why Goff was checking it down all night. When you go four deep, you have one less defender underneath, so the checkdown game is there. But I think any team, any defense would gladly let the Rams check it down on them, because the Rams kill you with those 15 to 25 yard plays.
Yeah, I feel like especially once Cooper Kupp went out, you're missing those sort of deep over routes that sort of were sprinkled
good
in
point
throughout the
yeah,
first
we haven't
half
seen
of
those.
The season.
Yeah,
and yeah, they're just, I don't want to say it's no big plays, but it's, well, yeah, it's fewer big plays. It's not an offense that just relied on 60-yard touchdowns, but you'd get them every now and then, and they haven't gotten anything near that the last 3 weeks.
Well, and something the Rams also do well is build rhythm off of explosive plays. They'll get to the line of scrimmage quickly, and they call plays based on what happened on the previous plays. They build their offense. If you're not getting those explosive plays, it's almost impossible to you're not obviously building rhythm off the explosive plays, but it becomes almost impossible to build any rhythm, period. And I think that's what we're seeing. The common factor between the Lions a few weeks ago, who outplayed the Rams at times on defense, they lost the game, but then the Bears, who embarrassed the Rams last week, now the Eagles, who upset the Rams, the common factor was cover four defense a lot of the time, or safeties back, and then the pass rush, especially with Chicago and Philadelphia, talented pass rushes beating what all season long has been a good Rams offensive line. It has not been the last few weeks, so.
Four quick hitters before we move on from this game, Andy. Number one, I don't think I've ever been so nervous with a ball in the air as I was that 50-yard completion to Alshon Jeffrey, where Jeffrey and Aguilar were like 15 yards behind the secondary, and it looked like the two of them were going to go up and collide and knock it out of each other's hands, and it was just going to be the saddest thing imaginable, because Nick Foles was basically getting his sternum crushed by yeah. Ndamukong Suh, I think it was.
Donald on that play. Donald's the one who got his shoulder early. I think you're right.
Yep.
I think it was Sue on that big one. Yeah.
I do think it was Sue on that one. It was Donald earlier. Number two, Todd Gurley banged up his knee a little bit, so that's something we have to keep up on or keep track of going forward here. I don't really remember what my other two things were, but I had four good points, and now I missed half of them. I guess that's just how it goes right now.
I'll just reiterate my point then. They're facing good defensive lines, and when they get to the postseason, they got to deal at some point with Chicago, New Orleans that has an improving D-line, Dallas that might have the NFC's best D-line. Minnesota could be there. That's a great defensive line, and Seattle's a quietly pretty good defensive line. So this has to get cleaned up. Otherwise, the Rams, they're going to be a one-and-done playoff team.
Yeah, I guess that's the one silver lining. If you're going to hit this slump, it's good they're hitting it now as opposed to hitting it on first week of January. Got some time to sort things through. It'll be interesting to see how this plays out. Before we move on, Andy, a lot of people out there would like to get into the stock market, but maybe it seems a bit overwhelming. But we have really good news for you because we have a solution. It is Robinhood, the investing app that gives you a non-intimidating way for stock market newcomers to invest for the first time with true confidence. Other brokerages charge up to $10 for every trade, but Robinhood does not charge commission fees. Trade stocks and keep all of your profits. Robinhood has easy-to-understand charts and market data. Place a trade in just 4 taps on your smartphone. Robinhood is giving our listeners a free stock like Apple, Ford, or Sprint to help build your portfolio. Sign up at 10things.robinhood.com. That's 10things.robinhood.com. All right, let's go Steelers-Patriots, Andy. This was a strange game. And it's not just strange that the Steelers actually beat the Patriots for once. It was a strange game because the way this started, it felt like it was going to be a 42-40 type of game. And both defenses stepped up. Both offenses kind of struggled. But I do want to talk about what the Steelers did defensively in this game, especially. I mean, look, they gave up on the busted coverage, the long Chris Hogan touchdown. But they seemed to – Keith Butler just seemed to – press all the right buttons in this game as far as mixing coverages and blitzes.
And that's what they did last week at times against Oakland, especially the mixing coverages part. The blitzes, it feels like they've gotten a little bit away from that based on what they were doing with it early in the season. They became a very aggressive blitz team. Their linebackers, we've talked before, they're very well-schooled on timing their blitzes. Vince Williams, John Bostic, who was back in the lineup today with LJ Fort not playing. But I don't think that's what this defense has been defined by lately. In this game, to me, it was changing up the coverages. It was our guy Sean Davis on Gronkowski after all. I figured he'd stay in center field. We talked on the Thursday show who guards Gronk, Morgan Burnett, Terrell Edmonds, both of them. And at times it was double-team help with one of those guys. Edmonds is usually the double-teamer in their scheme. But it was Davis moving down to guard Gronkowski again, even though Davis got destroyed by him last year. They did a nice job on Gronkowski. The big key, though, was I thought TJ Watt was so disruptive off the edge all game long, yeah. And that rest of that 4-man rush was getting home, so they were playing coverage with 7 guys all day.
Yeah, this was when they played in the AFC title game 2 years ago, they really went coverage. They were dropping 8 a lot, and it went horribly. They got carved up by Tom Brady. It seems like they found a nice mix the last 2 years. And last year, obviously, everyone remembers the Jesse James game. But they played well in that game. And they played well defensively again in this one. And look, when the when the Steelers had to punt that first time in the first quarter, I thought, this is going to be one of those games where if they have to punt multiple times, they're not going to be able to keep up. And defense got it done.
Well, that AFC Championship game you referred to, when they were walking off the field, Tomlin and Keith Butler had a conversation right then and there. We've got to be able to play more man coverage. They were such a zone defense back then. They lined up and played simple zones, and the Patriots killed them by getting linebackers having to cover the Patriot receivers. Edelman inside underneath, these 7 to 12-yard catches, that was the game. We're seeing more matchup stuff. They're not a pure man-to-man defense in Pittsburgh, but they match up more, and their zones have a more matchup feel. And going out, I'll tell you, Joe Hayden, his grades are not good, I guess, on PFF or whatever this year. Joe Hayden's film has been fantastic, and he's given them a big dimension in the matchup game. He's been a great downfield perimeter cover guy. They move him around at times when they want. Today, he was a matchup on Edelman or Chris Hogan, which is interesting also that defenses are not treating Josh Gordon as the number one receiver there in New England. That has not looked that way for a few weeks. But they've got matchup guys now. They have a little bit better athletes at linebacker, and then they're using their safeties as help defenders to match up rather than just landmark zone-dropping guys. So it's a different Steelers defensive approach than it was 2 years ago and for the many years before that.
Yeah, Artie Burns got benched for a little while after that busted coverage on the Chris Hogan touchdown, which leads one to believe that it might have been on him. They were not.
You know, I think of. That's what I was going to say. You have ruined Artie Burns for me, saying Burns. A few years ago, I had someone who would watch football with me. They'd be in the room. They weren't really a football fan, but they were in the room on Sundays around me, and they would say they didn't like Eric Decker for some reason. And they did anytime Decker's name was said by the announcers, it was Decker sucks. Decker sucks. And they knew it bugged me, and after a while, they'd do it for then. And I finally told him, you got to stop, because Decker, he's not great, not that you care, but he doesn't suck. And if you keep saying Decker sucks, I'm going to associate that in my head when I think of him, and now you're screwing with my job as an analyst. Your Boo Earns has not messed up my job professionally. It's just really annoying. I was out on a run today, and I felt myself thinking about Boo Earns after the Artie Burns play.
Good. It's neither positive nor negative. You could twist it either way. I could have claimed they were saying Boo Earns, like Hans Molman.
They are now in Pittsburgh. They're absolutely. I mean, he's not good. It hasn't worked. They tried to rotate him back in. I don't know why they did today. Cody Sensabaugh has played pretty decently. The other thing that was interesting is Cameron Sutton got snaps inside at cornerback at times in place of Mike Hilton, and I that's got to be something. Off with it. There's no way that they're doing that because of merit. Mike Hilton's had a tremendous season in the slot, but we saw a little bit of a different cornerback rotation from Pittsburgh in this game, and maybe we'll continue to see it because it worked out.
What do you think of the Patriots at this point? Is this a game that is worrisome for this offense? You know, Brady threw a weird red zone interception that you normally wouldn't see from him. Is there anything that's concerning you going forward with what they are offensively, besides the fact that it looks like they're now going to have to play a road game or two in the postseason?
Yeah, well, if you're going to mention Brady, the red zone, he had the red zone gaffe against Miami last week, too, and it wasn't the take and the sack. That's not the play that stood out on film. That was just a brain fart play. Even the greatest of all time have those once in a while. It was the plays before that where Brady was really rushed and mentally uncomfortable, played hasty against the Dolphins in the red zone at times. That wasn't what happened on that interception, but it was uncharacteristically bad field reading and understanding of Brady to make that throw, just totally losing track of Hayden as the backside corner. If I'm not worried about Tom Brady, but it's worth noting these things, I guess, because they've been factors in the last two games. In fact, they maybe were the difference in both of those games. I'm not ready to hit the panic button on New England, but it's a little bit more of a condensed offense than we realize. I think the Josh Gordon thing needs to be looked at a little closer. What gets never talked about is how often James Devlin is on the field for the Patriots, their fullback. So you could say if the Patriots aren't running the ball at least semi-effectively, controlling the game a little bit with their ground game, you could say they're not a limited offense, but they're not the same offense, and that was what happened today. There were a lot of bad snaps with Devlin out there. Not his fault, just bad snaps out of base personnel.
Well, the Steelers hold off the Ravens, still a half game up. Steelers do go to New Orleans next week. I don't say that because of strength of schedule. I just say that as a fact that they are going to have to play the New Orleans Saints on the road next week. Let's go
automatic
to that
loss for them. Automatic loss for them. Good thing they won today, so they won't, because they're going to lose next week. It's the Saints.
I didn't say that. They're getting like 6 points in that game, though. If you want to listen to the folks in Vegas who are always right. The Ravens keep pace here. I guess it was the Steelers keeping pace with the Ravens since they played the later game. But the Ravens get their fourth win in five starts with Lamar Jackson under center. But Andy, you see a little bit of expansion in the passing game with Lamar Jackson.
A very little bit. This that you caught me off guard with that question. This is a running game conversation.
Yes. But it's always been a running game conversation.
And so then the conversation, Jackson threw some in-breaking balls a little better today, and he threw some seam balls, which is, the expansion that you're referring to, which are still throws between the numbers. That's where he's comfortable. Any other part of the field right now, he looks very wide-eyed and rookie-ish. But that run game dimension and what they've redone, the question is, it's very simple. They're running the ball about 45 times a game with Jackson in there. He's getting probably 15 to 20 of those runs himself. They're leveraging or threatening his legs on another 15 to 20 of those runs. That's what they're doing. It's working tremendously right now. Defenses don't have time to catch up to it. At what point do defenses catch up to it? And the Ravens are betting it's going to be after this season rather than during this season. That's the philosophical conversation. Mm-hmm. How long can we get by on this formula this year? There's no conversation about this being the lifetime formula with Jackson. He'll get hurt, and there's no quarterback in history who's made a career being so run-oriented. Cam Newton's the closest thing, and he's a really good pocket passer a lot of the times. So it's a conversation of, does this work for this year?
Well, I mean, look, this was they almost had that game won in Kansas City last week, and the other four games they played here, they've controlled the ball for 38 minutes, 34 minutes, almost 40 minutes, 37 minutes today. So it's a nice complement with what they have defensively here, and I just want to say I really enjoy Gus Edwards, because I this will sound somewhat insulting, but he's almost like a running back on autopilot. He just they hand him the ball and he just runs straight forward. Like
that's what they want. It's when the designs are winning, they want a guy that's going to run straight forward like the design calls for.
It's a robot of a running back, and he's 240 pounds, so he's tough to bring down a little bit too. So he's doing some nice work. This is fun to watch at this point.
And the O-line's playing better, too. There was not a road – I've loved their offensive line this season, but mostly for its pass protection. It was not a road-grading offensive line in the running game. With the designs they have with Jackson and the structure of the play, and they do all this jet sweep stuff. I actually sent a really rude text to one of their coaches saying how much I hate watching their film on Baltimore now, because it's just so hard to sort out the jet sweeps and the ghosts and all these moving receivers – in the running game. What that's done is made the offensive line's job easier. It creates different angles for their blocks, and it makes the defense or the defenders stand still longer, and so you're hitting stationary targets more than moving targets. So better offensive line from the Ravens. It's fun to watch this thing right now. I'm really eager to see how long it goes on, how long it can go on. They're going to go down swinging with the run game. They're not going down on Jackson's arm.
It'll be interesting. You get to January. If they get to January, obviously they have some games to win left. Once you get to January, the thought that you are going to basically control the game flow and play with a lead or not fall behind significantly in four games against quality opponents, I don't know. Yeah. That's a tough thing. They have the defense to possibly do that, but we'll see. Taking one game at a time. It's a good cliche to end on for this one. The game I was most excited about today, Colts-Cowboys. The Colts just, I mean, they are ascending on both sides of the ball. The one thing I'll note on this game is the Cowboys were without Zach Martin. Connor Williams was filling in for him. And you could tell there was a fourth and goal early on where the Cowboys sort of stacked everyone on the right side of the line. They put a bunch of extra blockers over there, and then they tried to do a little misdirection and run to the left side, and it was snuffed out. The Colts read it, stopped it, and that was it. Cowboys didn't have a great scoring chance after that, and this ends up being a shutout win for the Colts, who just, I mean, they controlled this game on both sides of the ball.
Matt Eberflus, their D coordinator, we talked about him on the podcast on Thursday going in. I think he deserves assistant coach of the year considerations. I think his head coach, Frank Reich, deserves coach of the year consideration. That Colts defense, I cannot believe we're saying this at this point in the year. They just shut out a playoff-bound, likely playoff-bound team, a team they're not overly familiar with. I guess they would be, because Eberflus is from Dallas, so he probably had them really well scouted, but these players have not seen the Cowboys before themselves, haven't faced them, and here they go in and dominate them in Indianapolis' building. That's a big deal. And these young defensive guys for the Colts look so well coached every single week. It's a simple scheme that they run, but they run it with such nuance and precision, and they have these little wrinkles in it. Like, for example, they put their defensive tackles in the A-gaps. So every snap is a double A-gap look from the defensive front four rather than having one guy in the A-gap and a three technique. They don't play with a three technique very much. That's kind of unusual. They slant their defensive line. They move them right before the snap, and then they have them change gaps after the snap. That's unusual. They do all these different things with their front four, and the back seven guys who are responsible for reading that that front four and playing off of it, they look really well coached doing that. Even though they're young players, not very high drafted guys, most of them, I couldn't be more impressed with the Colts as a defense right now, given what they have.
One guy who was not in Dallas when Eberflus was there is Amari Cooper, and Cooper had 4 catches for 32 yards in this game after obviously the monster start with the Cowboys here. And you know, we talked about it a little bit on the Thursday show. Maybe it's been a something of a receiver-friendly schedule for Cooper so far. But this was, look, DeAndre Hopkins didn't do much last week against the Colts. It was a lot of Pierre Desir on Amari Cooper today. So, he's getting a little bit of help. He's not going out there doing like a Revis type thing, but man, he has been really impressive the last 2 weeks. And this is a journeyman. This is a guy who just bounced around. He was in Cleveland. He's with the Chargers, and he's not a guy who should be playing this well.
No, I'm glad we're mentioning him. He's having a nice season. He's done that at other times in his career, and he's a big part of what they're doing down the stretch. Pierre Desir for the Colts.
All right, let's go to the Vikings. Now Kevin Stefanski's offense, I mean, Mike Zimmer must be just on cloud nine right now. They ran the ball so often and so well in this game against the Dolphins. It was a bit more choppy than you would think by looking at the final score. Final score was 41-17. Minnesota won this one somewhat handily. They started out really well. They jumped out 21-0. They were running the ball fairly well early. And then they went through some valleys here, and Miami came back, and they actually got to start the second half, they got a 75-yard touchdown run from Kalen Ballage. And this one was getting close. It was 21-17 at that point, but Vikings ended up pulling away. And yes, they rushed 40 times. Well, let's take Kirk Cousins out of there. So they rushed 35 times for 213 yards with non-Kirk Cousinses and 3 touchdowns in there too.
I would totally discard Kirk Cousins as a mole. He's a little bit of a red zone threat on read option, but I hear what you're saying. I understand that. And what stands out, you have to look at those first half rushing attempts, because some of that, they're protecting a late lead in the game. But first half, 19 times for 128 yards, and Cousins dropped back 14 times in that first half. That's very heavy run balance. But remember, Mike Zimmer, who almost goes out of his way to not praise his assistant coaches sometimes, pointed out that it's easy to run the ball when you're getting the lines moving them 6 to 7 yards off the line of scrimmage. And so he's not going to throw all the credit in the world at Stefanski. But remember, it's an inconsistent Dolphins run defense. We talked about that on the podcast too. We said if it's the Dolphins run D that we saw against New England, it's going to be a hard game for the Vikings. But if it's the Dolphins run D we suspect it will be, the one that we've seen most of the year, then this is a good chance to get on track. We saw the inconsistent version of the Dolphins run D in this game today.
Yeah, so the Vikings stay in that sixth spot in the NFC. They finish at Detroit and then host the Bears. And if they win out, they will be in the postseason, and we'll see if they can build off this thing a little bit. I don't know. The Dolphins, look, they have been on the fringe of that playoff hunt in the AFC all year. I don't know if it's really meant to be with this squad.
Well, they're not a playoff caliber team right now. They're very dependent on big plays offensively. They had the 75-yard touchdown, as you said, to get back in the game today. And quite frankly, I don't think they're a very good defense. I think they have some talent, and there are times where they look very good, but they don't play that way. So I hope they don't make the playoffs, because I want to see the best teams in the playoffs. And I don't think that's Miami this year.
Yeah, they no Xavier Howard again in this one. Minka Fitzpatrick had a pick six. That was a good play. This Dolphins team, I don't know. We will have plenty of time to talk about it this offseason. A lot of Dolphins fans are really upset with Adam Gase, which I'm just shocked by. This was a 5 or 6 win roster, and they have 7 wins now.
We're going to move on. Fans, that's what they do. It's either Tannehill or Gase. You're going to pick one. Maybe they'll pick them both. And then they get upset, and that's the life of a fan.
All right. They have 2 winnable games to finish up, Andy.
Knock it off.
Bears, Packers. Bears clinch the NFC North with this one. This was a Khalil Mack was dominant in this game, Aaron Rodgers, this was probably his shakiest performance of the season as far as just throwing the ball. He just missed a lot of downfield throws in this one. And look, Packers were probably not going to the postseason anyway, but there is a lot of hand-wringing going around now about, did the Packers just sign Aaron Rodgers to a monster deal as he is about to begin his decline and, basically... they'll be non-competitive or sort of a fringe playoff team for the next 6 years or however long that contract runs. I don't know what your opinion is, Andy. I haven't seen any physical drop-off outside of the stuff that you'd probably attribute to the knee injury he had early the season. I don't think the arm talent is worse. I think he's uncomfortable with the guys he's throwing to, and he's missing some throws, more throws than we're used to seeing him miss.
Well, and a lot of quarterbacks have had their worst days throwing downfield against the Bears. That's probably, yeah. I just praised the Colts and Matt Eberflus. That Bears secondary is the best coach secondary in the NFL. Ed Donatell runs the secondary. Coordinator Vic Fangio, they do the best job of the coach. You can tell us the coaching points because how everyone's always on the same page with the subtle, nuanced wrinkles to every coverage that they do, and they pattern match really well. They go from zone to matchup coverage well, and the only way you can do that is if you're anticipating the route you're about to see. So their film study process, their scouting reports, which come from the coaches, the assistant coaches are the ones who do that. I would imagine it's Donatell doing a lot of that. That helps. So that's why the Bears make people look bad. We need to have a separate Aaron Rodgers conversation for after the season. I think this coaching search in Green Bay, because of that contract that Rodgers got, and because it's Rodgers, and we're still talking about an immense talent at what we believe is the prime of his career, but he's on the back nine no matter which way you look at it. They've got to find the right coach and the right system for Rodgers, and I think that's a highly specific hiring. It's got to be the right personality of a head coach who will also – I think Rodgers needs reworked, reprogrammed, even though he's as great as he is. It's time to find a system that instills discipline upon him. The example, and this guy's not the right guy for it, I don't think. Maybe he would, but Adam Gase and what he did a few years ago with Jay Cutler, they need something like that, someone like that, to come in and play that way with Rodgers, and that's hard to find because it's not going to be a young coach because I don't think Rodgers will listen to one, and if it's too old of a coach, I don't think he'll listen to that either.
Man, that is dark right there, Andy.
Let's say they went out and got he's not going to get it, but Mike Holmgren or some guy if they brought back a John Gruden type, a legend to work with Rodgers, you don't want a coach that that the players could maybe think for even a second, the game's passed them by. You've got to have an innovative coach, but with Rodgers, you've got to have someone older than him. You can't have someone younger than him with the dynamic of that locker room and that personality. So that's why it's a hard touch to find, a hard sweet spot to hit on there.
It is. It's a tight window throw right there. One more note from this game. Mitchell Trubisky played well in this, and I thought that was especially encouraging because, look, this was a second meeting. The Packers had seen Matt Nagy's offense and some of the bells and whistles and some of the misdirection stuff, and the Bears still played fairly well offensively in this game, and Trubisky did not have the kind of erratic throwing problems that have sort of plagued him on and off the season. So nice win for the Bears. And if the Rams keep on losing, maybe they host a playoff game or I should say host a divisional round game, which would be really nice for them. Because that
the
is
tip
a,
of the cap to the Bears for winning. I mean, man, they win the NFC North. Nobody thought, I thought they'd be better this year. Part of me, and this is, I mean, it doesn't count, not even at all, part of me thought, should I pick the Bears? And I'll pick them fourth, just be safe. Those other teams are good. I wish I'd been more bullish on the Bears early on.
Don't beat yourself up. Beat yourself up over the Falcons winning the Super Bowl, but don't beat yourself up over the Bears. You made the prediction before the Khalil Mack trade, which it's not only bringing in Khalil Mack, but I think there is something to be said for basically signaling to the locker room with that trade, we're going for it. Like, we're not going to finish last in this division again as everyone thinks we always will.
You think I should beat myself up because of the fact, did I embarrass Sports Illustrated by making that Sports Illustrated's official pick for the 2018 season, the Atlanta Falcons, over the Steelers? Steelers, I breathed a sigh of relief today.
I think you should be writing handwritten notes to every SI subscriber apologizing for that. No, I look, the Falcons would have been, if Falcons hadn't suffered all the injuries on defense early on, would have been interesting. They've been so up and down on offense. I don't know how good they would have been with a healthy defense, but they certainly would be in the playoff hunt at this point. Don't beat yourself up, Andy. It's the holiday
season.
No, I'm
okay. I've learned how these prediction things go.
if you just put more weight into a strength of schedule. 49ers, Seahawks. 49ers are on a win streak. Back-to-back wins here at home. They beat Seattle. This game was enjoyable because these teams really seem to hate each other. The Seahawks kind of seem to get under everyone's skin, but this was a very chippy game. Lots of personal fouls in the fourth quarter if you're into that sort of thing, which can be fun sometimes. But, you know, you had Richard Sherman out there mixing it up. He didn't get any of the fouls. But, yeah, this was a fun game to watch. 26-23 in the rain. 49ers win in overtime. If you're the Seahawks, I don't know. It's a disappointing outing. They got a couple big plays on offense, but they didn't really. This was one where they didn't have a whole lot of sustained offense. And granted, it was a short week, but they didn't look great on Monday night either. Although that was against the Vikings, so I don't know.
Yeah, you're right. They didn't. They didn't look great. I have been impressed with the way Russell Wilson has played on designer shot plays downfield. I do think he's been more disciplined this season. I'm keeping a close eye. They've got a huge game coming up against Kansas City, don't they? And it's a run-based offense. If they can't run the ball on Kansas City, who I've decided is the most predictable run defense in the NFL, a lot of just two-gap stuff, and the Patriots do that as well, but Patriots diversify their fronts. The Chiefs don't seem to a whole lot. If Seattle doesn't run the ball better this upcoming week, then they're just pretenders for the playoffs. This game, I think you can try. I mean, 35 runs, 168 yards. They still ran effectively enough. It wasn't quite enough. I would chalk this up to just one of those days is my sense on this game. That's without having seen the film yet. But something to keep an eye on. You're right. It's been inconsistent lately in Seattle.
Yeah, special teams, too, were an issue in this one. Janikowski missed a PAT early. They also gave up a long kick return. So, yeah, that's kind of the way it goes. Titans Giants. So, look, I've been very impressed with the Titans this year. I've mentioned a couple times when they had all the injuries and all the guys running behind this summer. I really thought they were going to start slow. I thought it was going to be a lost year for them with the new regime coming in and everything. But they won games early. They're still winning games. They're getting better. They took Saquon Barkley out of this game for the most part as they go up to East Rutherford, and they shut out the Giants 17-0. I do want to ask you about Eli Manning, though, Andy, because Eli had a horrible time throwing the ball, had some light to medium rain throughout this game, but so there were some elements, and obviously the offensive line is still not great there, but no Odell Beckham Jr. either, but he was throwing nothing but ducks. I mean, the game ended with they had a fade route near the goal line, and it was not a very long way the ball had to travel, and he probably got it about 60% of the way there and sort of hit Kevin Byard in the heels to end this game. But
well, how far downfield was it? I mean, a fade route can be a touch throw. Where was he throwing that? I didn't see
it. Was
that
a touch throw
play.
It was as the crow flies, the ball probably had to travel about, I don't know, 20 yards, and he probably threw it about 12.
Do crows really fly completely straight as well?
I don't know.
Like, I don't know how that's the bird everybody chose for that.
That's another cut of your jib type of expression we'll have to look up at some point.
Oh, from that Belichick tweet a few years ago? The cut of the jib?
I don't even know what it was from. I just remember we talked about jibs a lot on that show. We had a jib episode, if I remember correctly.
Well, because a guy, someone tweeted out, Belichick did not like the cut of this guy's jib. And it was some reporter leaning back in his chair, and he asked Belichick, hey, Coach, this was the Charger game last year, the Patriot Charger game. He goes, Coach, this game was played primarily in the teens. Is that a style you're comfortable with? And Belichick just stood there, and then he goes, what are you talking about? And he said, the game, the score was in the teens. Is that just a way you guys are comfortable playing? And Belichick said, we prefer to win the game. And then moved on to the next question. And that's how they knew he didn't like the cut of the guy's jib, because he just dismissed a question. So, and I thought about that the other day, too. After I was thinking about Boo Ernst.
You don't remember that? That's worth – no.
Oh, well, okay. That's worth Googling, because I think it's tremendous video.
All right.
It's the way Belichick, when he said, what are you talking about? He's asking him a question, but he said it came out in the form of a statement, which made the guy who was asking the question look really small. And I think fairly justifiably so. It's kind of a stupid question.
All right.
What were we talking about before this? Eli Manning.
And not being able to throw the ball very far as the crow flies. But my question to you is, so I think back in October, November, we were all ready to move on from Eli Manning. And then he's played pretty well since then, and now it's kind of like, well, there's no great alternatives out there anyway. So, yeah, give Eli Manning the ball in 2019, see what happens here. He was atrocious in this game. He just he struggled to throw a football. I don't know how else to put it. I mean, is it – this is a scenario I would throw out there. And this is very much fan fiction, so please don't put any sort of authority into this. But they find a guy in the draft they like. There's a bunch of project types in the draft. It's not as good as last year's class, but you'll find some guys who you can say maybe we can do something with this guy. Would you rather have Case Keenum running this offense next year?
No, I don't think so.
Yeah,
I don't know. Maybe I answered too soon because you're thinking Keenum because of the Pat Shurmur connection.
It's the Shurmur connection, yeah.
do you think Keenum will be available? I mean, we have to have a Case Keenum conversation before this offseason's over, too.
Yes,
Denver's got a hard decision there.
I'm filling in some blanks here that might not actually play out, but I was just wondering.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Go ahead. Keep telling me what you were wondering.
Watching Saturday night, and obviously the Broncos have a lost season here, and at some point they're going to have to figure out a way to get a quarterback onto that roster there. But
that Saturday night game, Case Keenum's playing with his fourth and fifth string tight end.
Yes,
he's got a couple of rookie running backs. He's got pretty much all rookie wide receivers and a retooled offensive line.
But he still hasn't been good this season. I'm not saying he embarrassed himself on Saturday night. I'm just saying you would not, no one at this moment is saying, well, let's, more Case Keenum next year for Denver. They might keep
him. I
said, the alternatives are not great this year. It's not like last year where you had, four or five really good prospects in the draft, and you had, Kirk Cousins was going to be out there, and we were all sort of bullish on Keenum coming off the run in Minnesota. You just don't, you're going to be just shuffling some dudes.
Here's what to bring this conversation on Manning back to the immediate. Barkley was a non-factor in the game today. 14 runs for 31 yards, 2.2 yards a pop. He actually had a 17-yarder in there, so 13 runs for 14 yards if you take out his longest run. So nothing from the ground game. Odell Beckham's out. They're facing a diverse, aggressive Titans defense and a Titans team that itself was running the ball effectively. I don't know what's gotten what fountain that Derrick Henry's drinking from now. But I want to have it. Those are the circumstances. All right, those are very unfavorable circumstances for a QB, and the results were Manning played very poorly. The discussion then becomes, how damning of a commentary is that on Manning? Because on the one hand, you could say, well, it's horrible circumstances. On the other, you can say it's a quarterback's job to work their way out of horrible circumstances, and the throws weren't looking good. He didn't compensate, and that's going to get into philosophy and how you view QBs and how a person, Dave Gettleman in this case, Giants GM, how you view Eli Manning individually. And I think I'm still on the Manning side. I think I'd still keep Manning, and if you put the right guys around him, you're going to be fine. It's a Giants defense that's very much in rebuilding mode in a lot of ways, too. I don't know. I don't think there's a better alternative out there off the top of my head, but we're months away from the meat of the offseason.
Yeah. Yeah, I'll just say that. There could be as many as 3 former Super Bowl MVP quarterbacks available on the market this offseason. Manning.
A feeling that's going to be misleading. Manning, Flacco, and Foles. Yeah.
Okay. That's not misleading. They all won Super Bowl MVPs.
Yeah.
I should have made it a trivia question. That's not much of a trivia question, though. Derrick Henry, by the way. Derrick Henry had another monster game in this one. And I think there's somebody said, I can't remember who we've talked about this. Maybe it was a David Johnson conversation 2 years ago or something like that. There's somebody said for a relatively fresh big back in December. I mean, when you have, you know, at this point, 13-plus weeks of wear and tear on your body and you're going up against, trying to tackle Derrick Henry, I mean, that's a nightmare scenario for a defender in the NFL.
I have it. Since you're always doing trivia, I have one to ask you, and then we'll, after the end of the lightning-ish round, which I think we're getting, you're excited.
Yeah.
We're coming up on the lightning-ish round, so you're going to have to think fast here. During the Steelers Patriots broadcast, Jim Nantz mentioned that 13 of the last 14 or 12 of the last 13, one of those two of the AFC Championship games have featured either the Patriots or the Steelers in them. And I was trying to stay – I've got a lot I'm watching on these games. I take very extensive notes. I pause it a lot. I'm looking at personnel. And I couldn't for the life of me get past trying to figure out what's the one championship in the last – dozen or so years that did not feature those teams, and I never did figure it out. I finally moved on. I have it now because I have it in front of me, but I'm going to let you have the fun and see if you can do you know the answer now, or can you
I thought the exact same thing, and I thought about it for like 2 plays, and then I just moved on with my life.
All right, I'll give you the answer here at the end of the show
after the lightning,
and our listeners can play along.
I do want a couple minutes to think about it. Let's do the lightning round, and then I'll see if I can piece together a guess. Lightning-ish round here. We're going to touch on the Saturday games, too, real quick in this one. But Bills-Lions, Bills get the win. Let's talk a little bit of it was a 14-13 final, so obviously not an explosive offensive performance by any stretch of the imagination in Orchard Park here. But Robert Foster is becoming something here, the undrafted rookie.
I like him. Yes, I love him.
Look, his background was he was a super prospect recruit for Alabama, and then he just did nothing. He struggled to catch the ball, couldn't get on the field, and Alabama is obviously always loaded. But I mean, this is like a late bloomer. He is coming into his own here.
I tweeted over, I think it was Friday, and I don't usually bother tweeting on Friday, but I opened Twitter just to say this. I think Robert Foster is a star in the making. I think there's a hidden gem sitting up there in Buffalo. What I like about him is it's football speed, for one. He's got speed that translates to his route running. Mm-hmm. So he makes you play coverage a little bit differently. But then when you have a guy like that, the next most important trait to speed is the ability to throttle down, to turn off the speed. Brandon Cooks is great at it. Antonio Brown's always been very good at it. Robert Foster has an excellent throttle down. And for that reason, I think he can become a true big-time perimeter weapon if he continues to refine the other elements of his game, which I think he's doing because he's getting better over the course of this season. So I love that you brought him up.
Let's go Jaguars Redskins here, and let's shame the Jaguars. I think the league has to intervene with the Cody Kessler thing at this point. This is out of hand. They have 21 points by the offense in the 3 Kessler starts at this point. This is Josh Johnson and Josh Johnson. look, he's with his 12th team, and this is his first win as an NFL starting quarterback. So good for him. They get the late field goal, win it 16-13. But this Jacksonville thing is this is an embarrassment at this point to play this style of football in 2018.
Yeah, I kind of agree with you. In that. I'm trying to understand. I'm looking at these total stats here because 26 rushing attempts, and they actually ran for 172. So, and Kessler had 68 yards. So, okay, they did pretty well running.
68 yards running at 57 passing.
So, I'm just now getting to the passing, but you're right. That's not very many. If you add the sack yards in, he netted 20. So, yes. 6 sacks for 37 yards. So, 23 dropbacks, 26 rushing attempts. That's about 50 snaps. Figure there's a penalty snap in there, here, and there. Washington ran the ball 33 times for and dropped back 28 times. I guess that's close to 60 snaps. That's just not very many snaps in the game. I'm just wondering who had the ball in this one, because usually if one team's got 50 snaps, it means the other team had 75. You know why I'm looking at this? Is because I was hoping to not have to watch this film. Because I thought, oh, Josh Johnson, Washington will be eliminated. Yeah. Jags aren't going to play Kessler again. They're going to be eliminated. I could probably sneak by. I don't skip film very often, but I thought I'd sneak by, go do a Christmas activity this week, and then, son of a crap, Washington wins this game. They're now technically alive, and I feel like I have to watch it. That's why I'm counting the snaps here.
Yeah. Yeah, this was you're gonna have fun watching that one. That's all I said. Look, good for Josh Johnson. He actually led a touchdown drive in this one, which did not happen for Jacksonville, and then they ended up getting the game winning field goal as time expires. 16-13, they come back from the 13-6 deficit in the final half of the fourth quarter there. So nice. Very nice. Falcons beat the Cardinals. Falcons finally put up some points. They did trail 7-0 in this one early and ended up putting, it was 40 unanswered is what it got to. And then a garbage time touchdown for Mike Glennon and company. But, I don't know. I have nothing to really say about this game except that I've been kind of disappointed with the performance of this Cardinals offense the last couple of weeks. I mean, they're just not,
I have too.
They're not good enough on the offensive line, but you would have hoped that they had a little something more going with between Rosen and David Johnson and Larry Fitzgerald and then Christian Kirk.
Yep. When Leftwich took over, I thought we'd see a little bit more versatility from David Johnson, more of the empty formations in the passing game there where he was so good last year. We really haven't, and Rosen has not thrown with the same kind of precision accuracy that wowed me when he first took over earlier this season. My guess is he's playing behind a bad offensive line. He's a rookie QB with very mediocre wide receivers who had a coaching change and therefore a little bit of a system change on the fly and a bad offensive line. So that's probably the answer. But I would have hoped that Rosen, I thought he was going to have the steadiest rookie season of all these QBs. And here we are finishing the season. And he's probably number 5, actually, if you were just to pick who do you trust most starting, if I'm picking a guy for week 16 among the rookie QBs.
The Bengals beat the Raiders at home, and this was a Jeff Driskel type of game. They end up running 41 times for 171. Got a lead, pounded it out a little bit. They lost Tyler Boyd to an injury at one point in this game, and Lord knows they can't afford any more injuries with this Bengals roster. But they got themselves a win here, pretty nice.
Tyler Boyd's had a very nice – I'm going to think about him long and hard with my all-pro votes. If I have to pick a slot guy, I don't think you do. You pick a slot defender, I don't think you have to pick a slot wide receiver. But as a pure slot guy, he's been one of the best in the league this year. Joe Mixon's running more decisively now than he did early in the season. That's very encouraging.
Yeah, he had a nice clinching 15-yard run where I kind of had to squint. I thought it might have been Gio Bernard. The way he was moving so quickly and swiftly, but he looked really good in this one and ended up with obviously some nice numbers here. 27 carries, 129. Saturday night. Let's touch on Saturday night real quick. I'm sure most of you have already been overwhelmed with analysis. Texans win that game in East Rutherford. They beat the Jets. It was not pretty. Jets controlled that game for a portion of sort of the meat of it, the second and third quarters, and Texans had to come back, which is good. And look, you know, DeAndre Hopkins kind of bailed them out a little bit, made some plays, but that's how it goes.
He has – name a receiver who's more valuable to his team than DeAndre Hopkins is to the Texans. Name one who's close.
I mean, if – granted, Will Fuller's out. So not that Will Fuller is a true number one, but they're even thinner at that position. But if Hopkins – when he was limping off or when they carried him off after the last touchdown – I mean, all I could think was if he's going to miss time, if that's, God forbid, an ACL, they're done. They can't win a game in January.
So Hopkins is out of this world tremendous. I just can't get over because, again, he's not fast. He's not quick. He is strong. You give him that. But he's not overly refined either, although he's gotten more refined than early in his career. And yet he's absolutely unstoppable. It does not add up. I've never seen someone who's so good at making contested catches. What you worry about with Houston, we've already talked about it, is Deshaun Watson's not playing completely on schedule. And it's not a crisp passing game right now. It's a lot of just throw the ball near Hopkins and hope he wins, which is working for now. That's not a plan. You're not going to build on that. You're not going to get better as a unit that way. And the 6 sacks that the Jets recorded in this game, that's not a powerhouse defensive line or pass rushing unit for the Jets either. That's indicative of the passing game being unrhythmic, to invent a word. I think that's an invented word. That's the issue with Houston. If they don't get better on offense, then they're not going to be a big playoff threat, even if they wind up getting a bye week.
Arrhythmic, I believe, is what it would be.
Thank you, yeah. Editor. You're right. Yes, that's embarrassing.
What?
That's a very untypical mistake of me.
What? Non-typical, Andy. What? I don't know. Ill-typical. Watson seems to be having a lot of issues with corner blitzes here. It seems like that's what's gotten to him each of the last two weeks. And I guess the plus side is he did they had that late conversion, that first down to Hopkins, where he sort of threw behind the corner blitz, which was nice. But yeah, it just seems like it's. If they are not running the ball really effectively, it just seems like they're not quite there with the rest of the offense to make up for it.
I agree with you.
Well, let's just go to the late game then, the Browns-Broncos game.
Did you watch this game? Did you stay up late on Saturday?
Yeah, I had to write about it for the site.
I didn't read the site today. I'm sorry. I thought Robert Klemko was writing for the site because he texted me at this game.
Yes.
And said, are you watching this game? And a few years ago, Klemko texted me on Seahawks-Packers, a week one game. I think that was the 2015 season, Sunday night. And he texted me the threat of a spoiler. I said, don't say anything. I've got it on DVR. It's how I watch it. And, of course, because he's Robert Klemko, he immediately texted a spoiler. Now, what he thought he was doing was being funny because he wrote, I think whoever lost as a team, he said won. You know, he said the opposite. Mm-hmm. So later he can put up his hands. No, I didn't spoil it. But even when you do that, it's still a spoiler because it makes you think about that the entire game as you're watching. You're thinking, did Klemko spoil it? Did he not? Rather than just watching the game. So Klemko texted me Saturday night, so you're watching this game. I said, I'm actually just starting it. So I was about 2 hours into the game, and I'm going to now mute my phone since I know it's you texting me. I'm sorry, but see you later. And I did. And he just had genuine – he said he wasn't going to spoil, and he didn't. He just had genuine Browns questions. But anyway, I thought he was writing about the game because that's why he texted me.
He did. He did, but he filed at 9 the next morning, whereas I wrote off the game for my Sunday column. I was asked to do that.
You're going to have to have a talk with him about timing then.
Anyways, this is – look, Browns get another win, and that's great. And like, you know, we talked Case Keenum a little bit earlier when we said it was a foregone conclusion he'll be the Giants starter next year. But I don't know. The fourth down decision, Andy, I guess that's what we're gonna come down to here. Vance Joseph kicking the field goal down 4 at the time, 4:35 to go, 4th-and-1 on the Broncos 6. It's a tough one to live with.
You didn't like it?
Did you like it?
I was okay with it. I didn't like it or dislike it. I was okay with it.
No. No, it's... it's
great. Here, your show just got 10 minutes longer. All right, I liked it.
I'm going to transition into the thing of the week here. I'll do you that favor, Andy. We will officially end the lightning-ish round, so I want everyone to acknowledge that. You're no longer in the lightning-ish round. We are on to the thing
of the
week.
This feels dirty. You're going to ramble, and then I can't chalk it up as a longer lightning round again.
This is like you go into the soundproof booth, and I just get to say whatever I want to say for a while. No, I was trying to – I like Vance Joseph, and I feel bad for Vance Joseph in that he's taken over a team that just hasn't had good enough quarterback play the last 2 years. And in 2018, you just see you can't win without – you have to have a defense that stands on its head, like the Jaguars did a year ago, or you have to have a certain level of quality at quarterback that they just haven't had. So I root for Vance Joseph, and I want to see him do well. I still think he should, but I would like to see him keep his job. It would make me happy if he kept his job. I don't know if he will. That play, though, because if you don't get the fourth down, you have him pinned deep. To kick the field goal, then you got to kick off. Then you it's like you have to move the same distance again to get the second field goal, where as opposed to, I hated everything about it. On top of that, he's trusting a defense that is completely decimated in the secondary. So at some point, you're probably gonna have to stop a passing play, and they were out of defensive backs. Not to mention, you're trusting your offense to move the ball like that, 30 yards or whatever they have to get into field goal position again when you can't trust them to get 1 yard on fourth down. Oh, I hate it.
Well, let me remind you, if you kick the field goal there, then a safety wins it for you. So if you get them backed up, you get a safety, you win the game. But that's not very common. I'll give you that. So then the next thing would be he had two timeouts left. There was about 4.5 minutes to go in the game. I get what I remember thinking, I understand the decision. He's probably going to get killed for it if it goes poorly, and I guess he has. But if there needs to be probably a touch more time left for that to make sense, because what I liked about it in theory was by kicking the field goal, if you give up the field goal, I don't know, I guess I was going to say a touchdown wins it, but if you give up the field goal when you're down by, what were they, down by 4?
Yeah.
Yeah. The more I think about it, the more I think you're probably right. It's probably not a great decision. I didn't think it was a horrendous decision. Greg Williams had an interesting fourth down play as well in that game.
Yeah.
Going for it on 4th-and-1, rolling the dice, and it came up short. We forget about that sometimes, don't we? These coaches that go for it on 4th-and-1, we pat them on the back. How ballsy of you. And then when it goes poorly, the Eagles had one get stopped tonight at midfield.
Yep.
We kind of forget about the failed fourth down calls sometimes. Dan Quinn had one in overtime a couple years ago against the Chargers, a really good Week 17 game against the Chargers, or Week 7 game, I mean. But usually we don't remember the failed fourth downs like we remember the converted fourth downs.
I did want to ask you real quick if you'd have any insight. On that fourth down play for the Browns, so you had the neutral zone infraction as Greg Williams is calling timeout. They grant the timeout so they don't get the first down and get to kneel down and end the game. When it's Greg Williams, I know only the head coach can signal the timeout, but is that a timeout that's coming from Freddie Kitchens telling Greg Williams to call timeout because something's wrong, or would Greg Williams call that on his own?
That's a good question. I would imagine that's coming from the offensive side, because typically when a coach runs down to do that, there's something they're seeing on the defense that they don't like, and that would be a highly detailed thing that they're seeing on the defense that they don't like, which means that whoever is doing that is privy to the play call and the play design. So that probably comes from the offense, and it goes through Greg Williams' headset. But I don't know that for sure.
Well, my thing of the week was just going to be I do hope Vance Joseph gets another chance, because I think there's too much of a, I don't know, there's this huge emphasis. I wrote about it this morning, had you read my column, Andy, but
yeah.
There's this huge emphasis on symbolic moments like that for coaches or in-game decisions, because anyone who's played Madden can probably do the clock management and stuff like that as well as any coach. You know, Andy Reid,
I'm sure it's different when you get there in real life with the stadium full and all these guys around you that you have to yell at and these players around you. I mean,
that's what
yes,
I'm saying.
I hear you.
No, that's what I'm saying. You know, how many goobers out there, you know, to them, Andy Reid is the clock management guy, when Andy Reid is so phenomenally good at every other aspect of coaching that, you know, this thing that's probably like 5 to 10% of his job doesn't really matter
yeah.
in the end. But
it's funny, because you're right, that's a small fraction of a head coach's job, and yet that's the fraction that they get judged on by far the most, because fans do understand it. It's a mathematical
yes.
thing, and there's nothing else for fans to think about, so they're always right. And yep, I get it. That's good. Belichick, by the way, on that clock management at the end of the first half, showing that they were going for it on 4th and 1, then running the punt team out there so that Pittsburgh couldn't use or didn't use their timeout to preserve the half. That's the best clock management ploy I've seen in a long time.
Would you have called the timeout there if you were Pittsburgh and then risk having the Patriots come back out and go for it?
No, I think if I'm Pittsburgh, I think I have to keep playing, because I don't want the Patriots. No, I would not have, to answer, because I don't want them to go for it and keep marching either.
Yeah.
Both teams feared the other team's offense because they feared the other team's
yes.
quarterback, because those guys can run those 2 minutes, and it became a stare down, and Belichick won. He outcrafted him on that one.
It was good. It was neat. I like that.
Can I give you – are you finished with your thing of the week? Because I'm going to make my thing of the week the trivia answer for you. So you're going to get to –
oh, right, okay.
You're talking some more here, Gary. This is all
I'm going to talk through it a little bit. I feel like it would have been the year the Broncos beat the Patriots in the divisional round in like 2005 or 6.
Okay.
It was a Broncos game.
So the question was, what was the last AFC Championship game that did not feature either the Patriots or the Steelers? In that 2005, that divisional round game, I do remember that was the Ben Watson game where he ran.
Yes.
Was that?
Yep.
Yeah, that was
Ben
the Ben Watson
game
where he ran down Champ Bailey. That's a good guess. That is not the answer, though. It's more recent than that.
Oh, really? Who did the Ravens? Didn't the Ravens beat the
I thought that too. I thought that
Patriots to get there?
I even Googled, because I try to stay off the internet on these games because I have them on DVR. I even risked going to Pro Football Reference, looking up the 2012 Ravens, thinking, well, who did they beat in the AFC title game? They beat the Patriots that year, though. Wasn't the Ravens.
Then it must have been.
I'm going to give you a big hint, and I'm going to bet that you still don't get it. And it's going to be an enormous hint when you actually think about it.
Yeah.
If the color schemes of these teams,
yep.
There's only two because white is technically not a color. There's only two colors between them.
Because white is technically not.
Or
a
either
color.
That or white is all the color. I don't know. Whatever it is. There's if you're counting white as a color, then there are three colors between the two teams.
Wait,
so that's the.
That's such a is this is just confusing the whole thing. So excluding white,
no, including white, there's three total colors.
Well, on the uniform schemes, do both teams have white? That's
yes,
my question.
Yeah, because otherwise one of the teams would have only the color white as their uniform in that scenario, and then how would you see the numbers? Come on,
this is literally the most unhelpful hint I've ever gotten.
That's not true. You've had worse hints than this. This is a good one. This answers it. There's only two teams in the AFC that actually even fit this criteria now that I think about it. I was going to say
the hint again. I can't wrap my head around it.
the color scheme between the two teams in the AFC Championship game, these non-Steeler, non... So the color scheme in the Steeler-Patriots today, there were like five colors. Steelers are black and gold. Black, Patriots gold, are silver, red, and blue. Five colors. I'm saying between these teams, who are not the Steelers or Patriots, the color scheme consisted of three colors, including white. So only two real colors.
Only two real colors. So this would have been when the... Wow.
See? You're still not getting it. And I think there are
and
only...
it's recent.
It's recent-ish. It's recent-ish.
Well,
and...
it has to be within 14 years. Well, otherwise, yeah, it's not the answer.
It's your
so it's got to be
that's
Colts.
Recent.
Did the Colts beat the Titans?
No, because the Titans have three colors, Gary. This is why you're not following along. The Titans have dark blue, light blue, and red.
Did the Colts beat the Chargers?
The Chargers have three colors, dark blue, light blue, and yellow. Do you watch the uniforms?
Did the Colts beat the Raiders?
The Raiders would have two. That's a good guess, except
I feel like I was
except
closer.
Except that makes four. The Raiders are black and silver. The Colts would be blue and white. That's four. The answer, there's only three colors between these teams. You're
the
not
Colts,
even. You know what I've done?
It has
I've
to be
totally
Colts.
Off your game. You're not even thinking football anymore.
It has to be Colts, right?
Colts were one of them. There's a better. The listeners
the Colts
that haven't
beat
turned
one of the
this
Mark
off.
One of the Mark Sanchez. Dudes.
Yes. One of the Mark Sanchez Jets. I was going to say, the listeners that haven't turned this off are screaming right now. It's the Jets. I hope they're screaming
no,
that.
No, they're
the
all...
Yes!
They're screaming in terror because your mind-bending hint has just shattered everyone's brain.
No, the mind-bending hint was... if you just listened to it all the way through, it was highly specific and you panicked. You know what I did? I showed you a blitz look. And if you just had read the whole defense, you realize, oh, he's just dropping into cover two here. This is just a simple look. But you panicked. You got hasty. You started audibling. You're out of timeouts. You didn't know what to do. That was bad.
I'll say one thing, though. When people look back on that trivia competition in 10 years, that trivia question, that was 2009. That was in no way recent. That was closer to the beginning of the – it was the opposite of recent. It was unrecent. It was ill-recent.
No, because the whole thing is within the last 13 years, and that wasn't 13 years ago.
But was... saying recent means it was in, like, the first half of it. Or really, recent emphasizes it would have been, like, 3 or 4 years ago.
Well, look, there were 6 AFC title games involving the Patriots-Steelers before that 2009 game. And then after that, the next 8 title games involved either the Patriots or Steelers. So that Jets game, that 2009 Colts-Jets game, the epic battle of white and blue versus green and blue, that was right in the middle, basically. That was right in the middle of this 14-year stretch.
That's still not recent.
I said recent-ish.
Recent-ish or perhaps not recent. That's a wrap for the show. Thanks to today's sponsor, Robinhood. They'll give you a free stock to help build your portfolio. Sign up at 10things.robinhood.com. That's 10things.robinhood.com. Please support them the way they support us. Thanks to our researchers, Reed Foster and Ryan Taylor, for making us sound smart. Thank you to producer Shelby Royston, who had to listen to all that trivia nonsense. All the folks at Cadence 13 who make us sound good. Most of all, thank you to you guys for listening to this episode of the MMQB Monday Morning NFL Podcast. You are the best. Andy and I will be back with a deep dive show on Thursday. We'll have the mini mailbag. Send those questions. talkback@themmqb.com or we're both on Twitter. We're both on Facebook. Send them however you want to send them. To get our shows as well as the MMQB Podcast with Albert Breer featuring Jenny Prentice and Connor Orr, as well as the MMQB Gambling Podcast hosted by myself, Jimmy Traina, and Scott Gramling. Just subscribe to the MMQB NFL Podcast wherever you listen to podcasts, including the mmqb.com, SI.com, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, radio.com/10things, Stitcher, TuneIn, and other podcast providers. We will see you guys Thursday morning.
Tip of the hat to Albert, another strong edition of MMQB. Did you know your favorite team has a daily podcast on the Locked On Podcast Network? Steelers fans, we have you covered with Locked On Steelers. Cowboys fans, it's Locked On Cowboys. And Chiefs fans, it's Locked On Chiefs. You get the picture. Search Locked On, your favorite team. Search on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts for Locked On, your favorite team. Or tell your smart speaker to play podcasts Locked On, your favorite team. Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.